Hello and welcome to another edition of Drinking with Comics. I'm Sean. Two seats to my left is Mike Wellman. Now, one seat to my left, or one seat to Mike Wellman's right.
Or in the middle.
DJ Kirkbride.
Hello.
And out there, oh my God.
We have a live studio,
audience. We got Dorsey in the house.
Woo!
Dorsey. Dorsey's website, dorsey.com, right?
Dorseyfife.com.
We've got Joe Dot Baxter manning the technical side of things, the wizard.
I'm wearing Joe's beard. I don't know where I'm starting it.
Beard transplant. And then we have, as always, science officers Sarah and Aaron. So,
hey.
All right, guys, let's drink and talk about comics. So, if I may be so bold, before we dig into Mr. Kirkbride's wonderful comics, we are drinking tonight. I was telling them before we started shooting, I've been wanting to talk about this beer for a while. This is Modern Times Brewery. They're in San Diego. Really good beer. I have not had this one, the Fortunate Islands, yet. I've had the other one I have in the cooler. I forget the name of it, but it's the Saison. Really, really good. The other thing I really like about this beer, so they're in San Diego. They have like a brew pub. And
they have two locations.
One of them has a giant wall of comic books.
What?
It's like the whole wall is just covered in comic book
and
covers.
And they're all DJ Kirkbride comics, I heard,
all
too,
of them. Everyone.
We gotta go there.
He has variations done by, like, Wesley Willis, who died, like, 10 years ago, but he did an Amelia Cole. It's a weird...
You mean the guy that used to hit himself in the head?
Rock on, rock over London, rock on Chicago. Greyhound is a way to really... Yeah, he's awesome. If you've never been headbutted by Wesley Willis... Wesley,
you know, you always talk about.
I know he's talking about. But I've never been. Oh, I never received the headbutt.
How did he die? Not DJ.
I don't remember.
Wesley died from Modern Times.
Oh my God!
Drinking with
this is interesting. Would you like to read the can?
I can read the can. Yeah, I read the can because I don't have the taste buds of Sean Baker.
Yeah.
So it's like I can sound like I know what I'm talking. Does the word wheat on a can of craft beer make you assume it's some insipid macro beer analog, a tepid entry level? Beer that's nice at best? Well, those would be incorrect assumptions in this case. Wildly, shamefully incorrect. Fortunate Islands is bursting with citrusy, tropical hop aromatics because we dry hop the bejesus out of it with Citra and Amarillo hops. It tastes like wizards.
Mm.
That's good.
This is for you. Because I just said you were the wizard. In my head, I was even had the harmonica line. I'm not pointing to the viewer at home. I'm sorry. I'm pointing to Joe Dot Baxter. Joe, give him some kind of a thing in front of the camera to... No, not that. Oh, no. That's your hand. Okay, sorry. I thought we were going to have a Jim Morrison
moment. Had a great idea, dude.
What?
For a beer can or a beer bottle. Like, because, you know, I mean, this is kind of a tongue-twisty sort of, what do they call it, description, right? What if beer cans had, like, drunk tests on them? Like an eye chart kind of thing or what, you know, like...
That's pretty
some
good.
Some sort of... Even like a drinking game, like a video game, you know, like with your phone, that would be an expensive bottle. But I see that there's bottles of vodka that have light up stuff.
And they come in the form of a beer cozy, so you can keep it all.
Or you could, I was thinking in each individual can, but no, that's probably more practical.
A marketing opportunity.
There's some good ideas.
That's genius. Let's kickstart that.
Right,
this is what we do with genius ideas.
Kickstart everything.
Stop.
So it's interesting. It's very good. I definitely get the tropical thing, but in a weird way, like where it kind of hits and then disappears immediately. It's interesting. It
tastes like
grape
to me.
Really weird is their whole like about us thing. They say that they're all about Island of Dr. Moreau style mashups.
Ah.
So their whole theme is very, you know, that's
okay.
Why
Modern Times.
Yeah, this is great.
I feel like just pounding this and everything else in the cooler and then like...
I want to
eat that Dr. Pepper candy, dude. I really do.
Okay.
Can I have one?
Did you have any more information about Modern Times that you wanted to give
to
us?
To share?
Yes, for measures.
Because it is good.
Particularly, because that pretty much summed it up.
Okay, Island Dr. Moreau. I like it. I really like
that. However, if you're on the Island of Dr. Moreau, you're on an unfortunate island. This is a fortunate island.
It depends. Maybe not.
Okay.
I'll just leave that to you.
Cool.
So, let's talk about Amelia Cole.
Oh, okay.
So, I just finished binge reading the first three trades of DJ. So, okay, DJ writes a series called, well...
I co-write.
You co-write. Yeah. Well, I was going to go, you write it with Adam
yes,
Knave.
Yes, yes.
And the artist is Nick Brokenshire. letterer is Rachel Deering, and color assist by Ruiz Moreno.
Reese Moreno.
That's right. He even says on his Twitter, pronounce Reese.
Yeah, yeah. He tries to trick us with his name.
But it's a great, great book. It's published digitally as singles by Monkey Brain.
Yeah, Monkey Brain puts it out exclusively on Comixology.
And it's monthly?
Every 6 weeks or so.
Okay, okay,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
cool, that's cool.
We've been relatively steady, though.
Okay. And then IDW publishes the collections, the trades. Really, really good. I wrote my article for my comic column this week about it, and we're always tempted to make easy comparisons, like, oh, it's like this and this. And, I understand that, to some degree, that always does a disservice to things, but at the same time, it's a good way to put people kind of in the right ballpark right off the mm-hmm. bat. So I'm going to do it. Like, my two-second pitch was, like, it's Harry Potter meets Alan Moore and J.H. Williams III's Promethea. And it's... Well, tell us about it. I'll shut up. And just tell us about the premise behind it.
Oh, it's Millie Cole. My quick pitch, usually, like, at a con, I'll say it's like Buffy meets Harry Potter, which people tend to go, oh, because everybody likes at least one of those.
Right. Nobody knows what Prometheus is. So,
right.
That's a much better pitch.
Amazing.
That was good. Yeah, I was like, wow, I hadn't heard it. I hadn't thought of that, but it's super classy.
Buffy meets Harry Potter. So, yeah, Amelia's a young mage who is living between a world of science, which is our world, and a world of magic, and then she ends up getting trapped in this unknown world where science and magic are combined, and...
it's like Thor, kind of.
It's actually almost exactly like Thor.
No. Harry Potter meets Thor. Buffy meets Thor.
It's basically like anything you like meets something else you like.
There you go.
So you should probably
buy it. That's a good way to put it.
Buy it.
It's great. You won't be sorry.
Thank you. But yeah, it's a lot of it. I mean, it's an all ages book, which is definitely. It's definitely not a kid's book.
But it does not feel... Now, there are some people I think that would be like, oh, all ages. But it's not all ages like the way...
It's kind of inclusive, you mean?
It's definitely all inclusive. And like when you get all ages stuff from like the big two now, I feel like there's a schism where we've talked about this before, where some of like the Avengers titles and whatnot, you know, it's a little bit more mature, so the all ages stuff that DC or Marvel does is kind of very, very explicitly all ages mm-hmm. and might alienate older people. This would not do that. Like, I'm pushing 40, and I didn't feel like I was lost or talked down to or couldn't relate or anything like that. It was very so okay. So anyway,
yeah.
So.
Well, we're all in our. Everybody who makes it. I think we're all pushing 40 or at 40. So we didn't set out to make a kids comic. We just wanted to make a comic that like kids and parents would like together.
Awesome.
Like like reading or watching Star Wars with our parents or awesome. We just wanted something that everybody would like and that we like too. And because when I was growing up, I was growing up on like I don't know Byrne's Superman or Claremont's X-Men. You know, and those mm-hmm. weren't. Expressly kids, and there's some weird stuff in those books. Actually, now that I read them as an adult, but
they were kid like you know. As a retailer, I get really nervous when kids start looking at the new Batman comic.
Right,
it's
but
like,
you
oh,
wouldn't
yeah.
like if it was like Alan Grant and Norman.
Right,
Faithful
right, yeah. No, this is right. a this is a. That's I would awesome. Say the last 15, 20 years is this we have to start worrying about.
Right.
What level, you know, and yeah, there's gauges, but yeah, go ahead.
No, that's what I just wanted to Millie Cole to be a book that parents wouldn't have to worry about their kids reading and their kids would like, but then the parents will like too. Just want everybody to love comics.
So yeah. She's trapped between science and magic?
Oh, well, actually, so she ends up in this world where they're blended, and so that's the unknown world of Volume 1. Each volume's kind of like an Indiana Jones-style title. It's like Amelia Cole in the Unknown World.
Amelia Cole in the Hidden War,
yeah.
right?
And then Amelia Cole in the Enemy Unleashed.
Which was awesome. I read that and, like, I mean, it was so, like, rapid fire. The whole book. It just was like, whoa. Oh, it's over. Holy
it's kind of nonstop. Yeah,
yeah, it was cool.
We set it up. Now we're just, like, barreling through to issue 30 and, like, some grand finale. But yeah, she's, like, the world she's in now, it's kind of like, magic and science are both awesome, but magic's a quicker road in a way, you know? Like, you can just, like, Expelliarmus and make something happen as opposed to, like, I have to think about it and figure it out. So in the unknown world, magic kind of keep science down a little bit. There's like a class structure.
Yes,
and Amelia thinks
which is
that's
fascinating.
BS. Yeah, so it's like it's an all ages book, but also we're getting on our soapbox a little about equality and everything via magic and science. And there's a golem, and she has a magic pipe wrench and dragons and action and adventure.
So, what kind of response have you gotten to it so far?
Well, I think the people who like it really like it, you know, and it's nice. And by going through Monkey Brain and digitally, I think we're able to do a lot more than we would have. I feel like if we'd been in print first, even though we missed the single issue printings, which I'd love to be able to go back and do, like if I could go back in time.
Well, maybe down the road, like once it gets that acceptance, like, you know, like Bone, you know.
That would be amazing. Oh, yeah.
Like that's something that as a comic, you know, it was a black and white comic, but it wasn't a huge seller when it came out as a comic book series, but now people understand how awesome it is.
Oh, so yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
No, it's, yeah, Bone's one of my all-time favorites, but, we've talked to IDW a little bit about doing single print issues, and we'll see if it happens.
Should do like one of those 100-penny press things at least.
That's what we would like to do, just to kind of test the waters. But anyway, it's the people who like it really like it, and that makes me happy. And one of the best things is at cons, sometimes like a kid will come by with like, you know, like she'll come by, a girl will come by with her, like there's one, I think it was in Portland, a little girl came by with her dad on day one and bought volume one. And then on day two, she came back with her mom and was like, please, can I get, you know, volume two? I'm that's awesome. Proof of concept. Like, right there, she read it, she liked it, she wants the next one.
That's good stuff.
Yeah, so it's not, and she was, like, really happy, and, you know, and the parents are happy that the kids are reading, so.
Well, what made you decide to, I mean, Amelia Cole, like, you know, you're a guy pushing 40, and you're writing a female protagonist who's young, and, you know, like, what, and that you started that book at a time where, you know, that was a bit of a risk. I would say.
It's interesting. We started a book before that book, but kind of before it became the big conversation in comics, I think.
Mm-hmm. When did it start?
It started, actually, it was the 4th of, or it was July 2nd, 2012.
Okay.
Because Monkey Brain released all their books like 2 days early by surprise.
Oh.
Like, there was a tension coming, and they're all going to come out on the 4th of July, and then that Monday, like, we're out now. Like, what?
Oh, wow.
So it's a fun of digital, too, in a way, you know?
Right.
So it's
right.
Like, there are trade-offs. Yeah. But, as far as a female protagonist, like, I was raised by my mom, and, you know, and my sister's awesome, and my grandma's was amazing, and so a lot of great, you know, I have a lot of great female role models, to be honest, and we like the idea of doing something a little different. As far as younger, it's just because, like, I mean, I don't know, I can't do what Amelia does. I'm exhausted, you know, sitting at a computer all day, let alone, like, running around fighting dragons and stuff, so we made it a little younger.
I'm doing a comic called Amelia Cougar.
If we could get past issue 30, maybe.
Cool. Yeah, like that.
You do, like, a thing like the Max, where it's just suddenly 10 years later, you know? Yeah. Like, oh, wait, what happened? Whoa.
Well, she does grow along with the book.
No, she does. She definitely does.
Which is fun in independent comics. You can totally change the status quo at any time, and we really have...
It's so good. It just has a... Oh, man. It's such a... the vibe is so... Like, the Promethea comparison is definitely with the art, but also, like, just the... Everything is so magical. It's and there's, like, a psychedelic element a little bit to the art.
Okay.
Not, like... That's... I feel like saying that almost does it a disservice, but I want to, like, add the disclaimer that not, like, what... That probably makes you think of. It's just the flourishes to the magic components. It's like
flourishes.
How do you draw magic, right?
Right.
You know, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, well, but you guys do such a great job. And she's got this, I love these, she's got these bouncy teleport balls. So, like, it's like a bouncy ball, but it'll, you know, like, ricochet and then open a teleportation disc. And it's just really good. And the golem, Lemmy, is just fantastic. When you find out where the name comes from, it's like, oh, that's so awesome.
Is it from Motorhead?
No.
No, but it's not. It might have been for us, but not for Amelia.
Not for Amelia.
Yeah. Yeah, there is an origin. And the bouncy balls are really like other... There's another character named Hector, who is the protector. Hector. Protector. We know him as the Protector, and then we find out his name's Hector.
Yeah,
later,
there's a moment she's like, you're kidding, Hector the Protector?
Like, during a great battle, she makes fun of his name. But
have you introduced Chester yet?
Oh, that's... spoilers. It's volume 5. But, the teleport balls, she made him bounce just because it's more fun. Like, she's that type of character.
Yeah, right. That's exactly it. There is that... There still is, like, a certain amount of wonderment or fun to her character, and it's cool.
Thank you so much. Now, we love doing it, and... I was going to say, another thing I always like to point out about Amelia is she doesn't have, like, a tragic origin. She's not fighting for vengeance. She's not angry.
Are her parents alive?
No, they're not, but she's not, you know, dwelling on it.
Yeah, she was raised by her
nobody's
aunt,
parents are alive, you know, if you think about it. Whose parents are alive in comics?
In comics? I was going to say mine are.
You're
Yeah, mine are, too.
Yeah.
But you're not a superhero yet.
That's, yeah. No. But, no, I mean, actually, the raised by the aunt thing, I don't even know why we did that, to be honest. There's, like, a little mystery that we completely solved immediately with her parents, but, But yeah, we just wanted a character that wasn't grim and gritty. Like, when even, like, Superman's angry now.
Yeah, right.
Like, yeah,
we
Superman
need a character
sucks now.
Who is just, like, I want to help because I can help.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, she's so... Like, her motivations for being heroic are probably the best motivations of any heroic character. Like, there is always... I'm thinking of, like, reading the foreword to, he's got a DJ has another book that also is with Adam P. Nave called Never Ending. And that is kind of this, I'd never heard the term
oddly
before.
Oddly, it's the shortest book he's written.
The title's a lie. It's only 3 issues.
Yeah, right. In the foreword to that, they, I forget who does the foreword, but they talk about the pre-construction.
That's Chris Robertson, publisher of Monkey Brain and Edison Rex, iZombie.
Yeah. The he's like the creator of iZombie, right?
Yeah, he and Michael Allred.
Okay, that's right. I mean, I don't know anything about that.
You got to read. I should have got iZombie's awesome.
Is it? I know Rob Thomas is doing
the show. Show's good. The show's really fun. Yeah. Totally different than the comic, but both awesome.
Okay,
yeah. So far,
how's the writing for the show?
I think it's really fun. It's kind of like based like it's got a very Veronica Mars vibe, but she happens to be a zombie. And so it's really cool. I mean, as far as I've only seen the pilot, and I was so impressed.
Wow.
Yeah.
Big Veronica Mars. Veronica Mars season one is like, there's Twin Peaks, Breaking Bad, and Veronica Mars season one in my upper echelon. I mean, I didn't think that that would happen that way, but that first season is so freaking tight. So well done.
Well, you gotta watch iZombie.
All right.
Was this a Monkey Brain book too? Or?
No, Never Ending was a Dark Horse.
Okay.
But okay, so in that, we went talk about the idea that how did we get here?
Oh,
the dark and gritty.
The mind is the first thing that goes when you get older. Birthday boy.
Anyway. You're talking about Robertson's intro, right?
Yeah, but there was like a specific. It doesn't matter. So at any rate, so let's switch to Never Ending then.
Oh, okay. Somebody, who's here?
Somebody left. Somebody's spirit walked out.
Somebody just walked out of this. Like, oh, God.
Never Ending is interesting because it is. I don't want to do anything like a spoiler. I mean, there's not a lot to spoil. It's not like there's like a big twist or something. But I just think that it's worth reading, and it's one of those things where it's some things are worth reading because it's good, but then the ending is like, oh, that's the hook. There's not really a hook. It's just like a really good, well-composed 6-minute song, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah, no, thank you.
Every part is equal to each other, and it all adds up to the, you know, it's a formula that equals the finale. This is really maybe getting obscure, but so it is, I'd never heard the pre-construction thing where it's like Chris Robinson was saying in the intro, the prologue, not the prologue.
He wrote us a really nice intro. He's way smarter than me, so let's see.
There's the deconstructionist angle, and then there's kind of the, but then now there's like this pre-constructionist thing where it's like, basically you're concerned with what comes after. So, Never Ending is very much about, okay, here's this life that this person who is a superhero has lived, and he has his arch nemesis, and it's a little bit more complicated, and maybe even tongue-in-cheek, than that sounds. And then, so where does that go? Like, if Superman is always going to be having a series, right? So you're never going to know where that goes. Where does that end? Well, you can do things like Superman the End or, you know, whatever, but it's still, the book still goes on. So is that the end? This is like, no, this is like, we're saying this is the, like the twilight kind of this superhero. And it's just, it's fascinating. It I loved it.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's kind of, it's about immortality too. It's basically like, and I guess maybe part of it's his origin doesn't really matter. Like, it's like, he gets the powers, not as a hero. Let's move on.
Yeah, it's kind of like we origin's out of the way. Yeah, let's go with it. Yeah, exactly.
We can make up anything. Like, you know, like, beepity-boppity, and he has powers, but it doesn't really matter for the story.
It's interesting, in the end, in the back matter, you guys, there's an interview. I love, all your books have these interview segments at the end. I love that. I love seeing into
Chatty Cathy's.
I love that. So, I think you mentioned that the original concept was like Captain Immortality, was that? Or Captain Immortal?
Yeah, I was trying to,
the placeholder name?
Yeah, I was trying to find out a name. That was cheesy. And
you said it was like way darker.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
really made me interested.
Well, the final scene in Never Ending, the original final scene is, in a way, kind of the final scene of The Bigger Bang, my other book now.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, is where I wanted to get to.
It was something I wanted. But yeah, basically, Never Ending is about exploring immortality, not like through centuries, like a vampire who lives forever and ever, but just like as a guy, he gets these powers, he's strong, everything. And then his girlfriend, then wife, like, you know, they have kids, and he notices she starts getting gray hairs and wrinkles, and he doesn't. It's like, oh, my God. And he's, like, permanently 25, where she's just living a normal life, and then his son lives a normal life.
Yeah, at some point, like, he comes home, and his son is like, oh, you can tell they're about the same age.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like a weird moment where it's like, like, I found myself wondering, like, how would people, you know, when you look in the mirror, you don't see anything different because you live with yourself every day, right? But when you see an old picture, you're like, oh, shit, that's right. Weird, right? Yeah. So what the hell would it be like to live that way where it's like, that's like the elephant in the room probably nobody talks about.
Right, it's a weird thing to talk about.
Yeah, it was really cool, and there was, like, so much, it's, I feel like Never Ending was all the things about superheroes nobody ever thinks of, you thought of, or you and Adam thought of, and you're like, what about this? And it was just right there.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's funny.
And they're not able to do that with books like Superman because they always have to come back to the status
quo. There's always
got to
be status quo at some point, no matter how much you change it or whatever. I mean, that's why with a lot of those books, it's like, you know, I read Morrison's Batman, and I stopped reading Batman after that, because I just want that to be, like...
You read, like, the everything of Batman with Morrison.
Yeah, right? And I just want that to be...
It just got good after he left, though. You missed the Scott Snyder stuff.
Oh, yeah, Scott Snyder's...
That's good stuff.
No?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I tried reading it, the Death and the Family series, mm-hmm. The first issue, I don't know what it was that made me recoil, but I could not do it. I read it twice, and I was just like, I don't like this. And it may just have been I was so smitten with more, especially, like, most of the Batman run is arcane, but then when you get to the Batman Inc., it was so good. I mean, it was so good, I just couldn't believe it on a monthly basis. I'm like, how is this still this good? Hmm. So
magic.
Yeah, he does know magic.
Also, I should mention Robert Love co-created.
Oh!
He's the artist of this book. Sorry, I just got to mention. He's
no, please. I should have done that.
Did another book called Number 13. But he was key to it because he draws really big, powerful superhero art. So it's kind of like a navel-gazing, kind of like Woe Is Me story. But he draws like a giant superhero.
So he makes it
epic.
Pop.
Yeah, so it's like he really helped the tone,
well
too.
Well said.
That's all.
So now let's talk about...
Oh.
So... And I built, so this is the final issue, right?
Yeah, it's issue 4. So, 4 issue miniseries. I did Friday W.
You know, this one was actually named... Jen gave this book its name. She's like, oh, you're a bigger bang.
That's not true. What?
Yeah,
right. She wouldn't mind that joke if she were...
She won't watch this deep into the episode, I promise.
No, she'll probably watch the whole thing.
Oh, wow. She's a good girl.
She's a big fan of you guys.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Not me. Oh, I always wait till 20 minutes into the episode before I start talking shit about my wife.
I've heard that.
Yeah. She'll never see this
everyone
far.
Everyone has heard that, and she's probably heard
how
it, too.
She not,
she's
yeah,
probably
exactly.
Like, she's
oh, probably what do you mean you can skip ahead on YouTube? Sarah's like, go to 21-37.
Remember Sixth Sense, where there was that thing where, like, oh, they'd been slowly poisoning that person for years, and they didn't know.
Is that what's
like,
going on?
She's probably like, oh, here's your cornflakes, Mike.
It's like, here's your Dr. Pepper candy,
exactly.
Mike.
Exactly.
Oh,
oh, no.
But I fight it with alcohol. Can I have a beer? Like one of those.
Oh my god.
Oh, that looks good. What is this?
That's Smithix. Can I tell you a story about Smithix?
Yeah, let's talk about roasted barley. I need a bottle opener for that.
There's one floating.
I saw a gentleman using like his hands. Were you using your hands?
I use my teeth.
Weapon!
Who uses their teeth?
I don't use my teeth.
Don't use your teeth.
I got it. We're good.
Okay. That's a nice. Oh, it's a penguin. That's delightful.
My wife loves penguins.
Adorable.
As do I. So Smithix, it's been widespread in the States now for over 10 years, but the first time I had it was the first time I went with two friends, Joe and Tony, to Ireland. And we did Ireland and Scotland, and at some hotel somewhere, I don't know, imagine this, I went to Ireland and Scotland, and I was drunk pretty much the whole freaking time. So there's blur.
So nothing changed, even though you're out of the country.
But I didn't talk comics. Well, maybe I talk comics. I don't know.
There's a lot of comic writers in,
there is.
In Scotland. Some pretty good ones.
There is.
Yeah, Garth Ennis,
actually.
Right.
Yeah.
That, well, Ireland.
Yes.
Yeah. So we're trying a bunch of as many like local beers and like stuff you're never gonna find in the States. So we're at some hotel and it was really nice and wood trim and all this stuff and I see it had a different label then. They just changed it within the last year. It was green. And I said, oh, can I get a Smithwick's? And the guy's like, he pours it, and he's like, Smithix. I'm like, what? Smithix. W is silent. I'm like, oh.
It's like
crap.
Django.
So then I was able to come, I came back home, and then it showed up, like, within a year. Guinness started distributing it in the States. And I was like, oh, my God. And it was awesome, because we'd always go to the bar, and people would be like, can I get a Smithwick's? And I'd be like, Smithix.
That's right.
W silent. Oh, my God, he knows.
Nice.
Cool.
But it's really, really good. It's
I enjoy it, too.
It's good.
Is it really good?
Yeah.
What's it remind you of?
Reminds me of Scotland.
Ireland.
Although Ireland somewhere. I've never been to Ireland. No, it's... what does it remind me of? You know, it doesn't have a label I can fall back on.
a
reminds me of 5.5% alcohol.
It tastes like brewed, sex with a virgin. Not rape. It's better than rape.
Wow. It, yes.
Wow, we're just hitting all everything the high notes is today, huh? All right. So... We're, oh, bigger bang. Oh,
there coincidentally.
Why okay do I start talking about my books after he says these things?
I'm sorry. We're using you as a smokescreen.
I know. What's happening?
I mean, were you worried because there's the Big Bang Theory, which, how do you feel about the Big Bang Theory?
I haven't
the
really show. I haven't watched it that much. It's a show that my mom tells me I would love.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, bazinga. I don't know.
Yeah,
is that
it's
thing?
Like,
I don't
know. Every time I work in a comic store, oh, you must love the Big Bang Theory. I must. You're
like, I have no choice but to love it.
I don't love it.
Everybody loves it, but yeah, you.
I know, it is the best. I mean, it's the number one show
in the world.
It's first of all, it's geeksploitation. Secondly,
Did you just say geeksploitation?
Yeah, it's just
you like, bet he did.
He did. You can hashtag that.
Yeah. Hashtag geeksploitation.
But it's, I don't know. Anyway.
But the comic's unrelated to it.
Exactly.
And it wasn't inspired by it. I was just thinking, the concept of the comic is like the Big Bang created all life as we know it here. Even though that's up for debate now. But the Big Bang created all life as we know it. And then the Bigger Bang obliterated all of us and created just this one being who's the star of this book. That's kind of like, can a hero rise from the ashes of such...
of everything.
Destruction!
Well, and like my immediate thing, I remember reading about this back in August, and then when I wrote the article, I was just rereading the same stuff that I read back then. I was like, how did I miss this? Because I did miss it. I haven't read it.
You're not the only one.
But I mean, it's just so much stuff. So
I know.
It's like that
it's
happens
insane
all the time.
Absolutely.
But I remember thinking, like, that's amazing because I love this idea where, okay, so the bigger bang destroys everything, and then you have somebody. So what is, I mean, that, like,
what do you do? I mean,
what is it like to be
everything
the person
else
that, like, everything died for you to become you?
Yeah, it's horrible.
That's him now.
That was
he's texting you.
Cosmos.
That's Carol. I am watching.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
She's live
streaming. Oh, that's right. We're live streaming, aren't we?
No.
Thank you.
We don't want.
It's all good.
Well, there's the multiverse thing. So that's how we act. Because I was like, that's a cool concept. But then what's he do? Oh, he goes into another universe.
Right.
Oh, all right. There are other characters. But, no, it is. It's. And, I do it with an artist named Vasilis Coxillis, and he's this amazing...
What's his name? Vasilis Coxillis?
I pronounce it Vasilis Gogdsillis.
I think you just call him Smithic.
You pronounce the W with his name.
Okay. Can I see that so I can just read it?
Yeah. No, we got like DJ Kirkbride, and then Vasilis Gogdsillis. The letter is Frank Svetkovic.
Jesus.
And then Justin Eisinger is the editor. So we have our
so
names
you pick,
are more
you pick your collaborator, like, I can't say your names.
Collaborators.
So we work together.
Yep. Our names are weirder than the aliens' names in the
that
book.
Is, yeah.
But I'm probably mispronouncing Vasilis.
I think you should have called the book Coxillis.
Well, that's the secret.
Wait, let me see how it's spelled, because I might be able to help you with the pronunciation.
I call him
I think it's two beers back is when I could say that. But go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's fine. No, it's just, yeah, he approached me and Adam and myself, actually.
That's
really?
An epic name.
Yeah.
Yeah, it truly is.
And he's from Greece. Yeah, he's
so how do they approach you?
Because
like
the Russian version of that name is Vasily.
That's what I know. Somebody mentioned that. I'm like,
what
I've been saying
it
wrong. It's Vasily, probably. But
yeah.
I'm like from Appalachia. I'm like, Vasilis Gogdsillis, hey, make a comic. That's me. And he has to deal with it. Actually, we just email, actually. So
have
I,
you
I
ever
never,
talked to him on the phone?
I haven't. So one day he's going to mispronounce my name, I'll mispronounce his, and we'll laugh. But he sent a drawing of just a giant muscle man in space and said, I want to do a superhero book in space. And Adam was working on Amelia and his other book, Artful Daggers, and like writing a novel, and he's too busy. And I was like, I'll try it myself. And what's interesting, though, is I'm not very well versed in giant cosmic stories, but Adam is.
Mm-hmm.
So as it was developing, the more he saw it, he's like, oh, man, this is like in my wheelhouse. I'm like, yeah, it is. Sorry. But no, actually, I'm like, yeah, please help me.
Right.
So, even though he didn't co-write it, like, I talked to him. And then Vasily's imagination is amazing and out of control.
I've
so.
Never heard the sound effect before. Fazang.
Fazang. That's how it goes. When the laser hits him, it's like, Fazang.
Oh, so it's like, it happens more than once, huh?
No, I don't know. I'm talking.
So, I want to talk about that. So you write with somebody often, not always.
I was just going to bring this up, too.
Yeah. This is the first time, actually, I've done I did a couple of like little stories in an anthology called Pop Gun, my mm-hmm. first two I wrote. And then after that, I teamed up with Adam, and I've been doing that ever since, until the Bigger Bang.
Did you know Adam before? Were you guys friends, or...?
Yeah, we met... He used to write for Too Much Coffee Man magazine.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and so we met... I used to write humor stories, and mm-hmm. I was just, like, looking at... when I first moved to L.A., actually,
Was he out here?
No, he's in New York. Oh, but okay. I just found like this article that he wrote about how to speak Klingon or something in an old issue. I thought it was really funny, and then I emailed him, and then I mentioned it, and he's like, "Oh, if you think I'm funny, we should write together." And then that's what happened. And I never really co-written before, and I haven't done it with anybody else. Like he's
you know. Had you written other stuff though before, like. Before you worked with him?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I worked for on a magazine called Tastes Like Chicken. It was a humor magazine, so it was kind of in the vein. So then I was looking for more humor magazines, and that's how I found Too Much Coffee Man. And so we started doing that and doing, like, just essays and stories and prose and stuff, but we're both really into comics. So when Pop Gun came along, I kind of invited him along.
That was the anthology for, was it Image?
Yeah. Image, yeah, okay. Big Fat One.
Yeah. Yeah, I started off as an assistant, and then... And moved up, and Adam worked with me, and then and we started co-writing, and I really like co-writing with him. I don't know if I could do it with anybody else, though. We've got a really good shorthand going.
That's what I was going to say. It's really hard, like, I mean, even working just with an artist and ideas and stuff, and
yeah,
I mean you got to put your ego in the back seat.
Not me. I just go, I'm right.
You get your way?
No. No, he's
way. I feel like sometimes when you collaborate, nobody gets their way. Like when you co-write, you know.
Well, that's kind of it. I don't think it's nobody. I think we both do. We both like just kind of become some like strange monster that like this what is that? The Superman Batman
The composite.
We become a composite writer, and we kind of fill in each other's strengths and weaknesses. Like he's much smarter than me, and I'm more emotional than him. So a lot of it'll be like it should be like this because I want it to be, and then he'll think about it, and go, oh, because of this, this, and this. I'm like, that's right. Oh, I'm no. smart, or he'll explain to me. Why I'm wrong, and yeah, so it becomes something that it wouldn't have been,
right?
And it happens with artists too. I mean, very much like the Bigger Bang is you know, Vasilis, like the way he interpreted the writing, and we worked together. I mean, it's I don't know. If I'd had this idea and done it with another artist, it would have been a 100% different book. Like you know, so it's, I love comedy. You know,
but he wanted to draw a superhero in space, so you wrote to what he wanted to do, right?
Yeah, it's like, and then I thought for some reason the Bigger Bang idea came to mind, and part of it was my editor Justin Eisinger said, "Don't say this because it's really depressing." But like the idea was like, you know, if a mother dies in childbirth, and then the child's left in and there's like guilt that the child doesn't deserve. Mm-hmm. Bless you, but
it's a good hook. I mean, you should have said that.
Yeah, well, I did just now. But yeah, so that's what. So he's basically the main character. His name's Cosmos, and he's like this superhero space god. And but he walks around, flies around with like this guilt of his birth, even though he didn't do it, he didn't choose it. And then people fear him because he has like this like cosmic stench of death.
Right.
And so it's like him trying to atone for the sins of his birth. And there's also like a Cthulhu monster and a talking space whale, and
that's awesome.
The most ridiculous purple prose captions I could think of.
Hey.
What's a purple prose caption?
Purple prose is like very, I guess like one of the best examples of somebody that does it really well is Mervyn Peake, who did Gormenghast. Mm-hmm. But it's like very, I always want to say flowery, but that doesn't really explain it any better than purple. But it's like very descriptive, but in a way that's...
right. I think I know what you mean. Like, the things you, well...
It's almost like poetic.
That you write and then you look at later and you cringe.
Science Officer Sarah?
I can help you with this. Yeah. In literary criticism, purple prose is prose text that is so extravagant, ornate, or flowery as to break the flow and draw excessive attention to itself.
There you go. That's perfect. Oh, you're very aware of the, you know, you're like, okay, he's describing this to a degree that's... But, I mean, some people do it. Mervyn Peake does it really, really well.
It's not... Actually, I rewrote the first issue. It was completely lettered, and there were way too many captions, and we like cut half the words of the book.
Really?
And so maybe it's less purple now. I think maybe a better word would be bombastic. You know,
okay.
Like when I'm writing it and I read the captions, I read it in this voice, like, you know, like Cosmos flies to the stars, and then I laugh, and then it's like, oh, but it's also sad. I don't know.
I would like from now on when the show starts for us to have a sample of you saying that.
Not sure.
Cosmos flies to the stars. That's amazing.
I want to start a new podcast now called
Drinking
Purple Prose.
With comics.
Purple Prose. Wait, blue balls.
Say that again.
Drinking with
Wait, let him say it. Let him say it.
My new show. I'm doing.
I'm sorry.
Good.
Purple Prose. No, what is that? That's my Jimmy Pardo impression. Yeah. Right?
Don Pardo, tell them what they've won.
Yeah, like with Nassim Padron. I don't know.
I
forget what we're doing. What happened?
I think we just.
You've won gonorrhea.
Ah, lost on Jeopardy, baby.
Yeah.
I was on Jeopardy. I was on the side of Jeopardy.
Oh, well,
I don't know enough to be on Jeopardy.
Oh, wow.
was on the
set. Suddenly I feel like the girl at the bar you're trying to pick up. You're like, look, baby, I was on Jeopardy. Yeah, whatever, creep.
Hey, I had a, I had a Dr. Pepper roofie. I might be trying to, you know, I would pick mace myself you. Up at some point.
I should hope not.
Here, I'm going to mace you and then just go over and shake your face over his eyes and maybe some of it will fall out. And
t-shirts. I got maced on drinking with Thomas.
T-shirts.
That's our t-shirt. Yeah.
There you go.
Merchandise.
If you like you're that welcome. Idea, let us
any
know.
Any studio audience questions or questions from the internet or complaints from my wife?
Oh.
She's a character. Like she's like the she's absent character on the show.
Does she know that she? Yeah.
No, she doesn't. She doesn't watch this far.
Can we do? It looks like there's not. I'm assuming. Nope. Can we do? Mike, would you hand me a beer?
Oh, of course. What would
DJ,
you like?
Do you need a beer?
No, I'm sipping. Okay. I can barely keep together.
One of these ones. Did you say one of these wacky
actually,
ones?
Can I try one of those?
Yeah.
Okay, so
he's strong.
DJ, DJ pulled really a couple good. Things. Well, first of all, okay, hold on.
Hold on.
Mike, is there, what do you, would you like to talk about something? Would you like to talk about a particular, oh, wait, I'm sorry.
Oh, we have a question. Oh. Okay, let's hear it.
And the Wolverine t-shirt.
All right, just a question for all you guys, actually, if you want to answer it. Talking about the Purple Pros, like, I noticed that, like, in recent years, a lot of pros has been cut out of comics. Comics are trying to be a lot more, I guess, cinematic.
Yeah.
Do you guys miss having more of that flowery, you know, a lot of those captions, you said yourself that a lot of captions got taken out of that comic. Was it because you were trying to be more like modern comics? Or did you feel like it really hindered the story having so much, you know, so many captions that it slowed down the pace? What do you guys think about that?
Sometimes good I like... Question. Yeah, it's a great question.
Great question.
I mean, some books, I think it's appropriate, and you want to slow down the pace. Personally, for the Bigger Bang, I just covered up too much of Vass's awesome art. And it was like, just shut up and get out of the way, DJ. He's, you know, like, let these images tell the story. Because, and that's what a lot of it was. I feel like a lot of the pros are the captions were saying what you're already looking at.
Right.
And so it's part of it's like working with the art and trusting the reader and the artist. To tell
well,
the
and I mean, when you're writing it, you're writing without the art, right?
Right.
So it's like, once you see the art, then you can be like, well, I don't really need that anymore because he. And I always say with comics, a lot of times I don't see the art because the art just sends, you know, Jack walks into the room and picks up a bottle. The artist does it. You know,
right.
It's like, I don't... There's so many books where I'm not even aware what the art looks like because it's just, like, kind of turns to prose or whatever in my... Or stage instructions in my brain.
Mm-hmm.
But writing it, I mean, you wouldn't necessarily know. So, I mean, it's almost like you're doing that and then you can... You put it there and then you subtract it, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was actually with the Bigger Bang, a lot of it was done. I just wrote, like, story descriptions. And Vass didn't want me to lay it out. He wanted to have control of that, so... So it was very different than what I'm used to.
Oh,
so
that's cool.
So I actually went back, and I think part of it was me like almost feeling like I needed to explain things, and
mm-hmm.
then later everybody going, "You don't." And I'm like, "Oh, you're right. I don't." Like, shut up, DJ. Even with Amelia Cole, like the first few issues, Adam and I overwrote them
mm-hmm.
before we learned how to work with Nick. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I'm sure you've experienced
that too. Yeah, I mean,
that's
too,
right?
You know, comics. I think are in a constant state of evolution, and one of the things, like, if you go back and read the comics that you thought were great in the 70s and 80s.
Damn
this Chris Claremont calling. He's like, "You better not diss
yeah,
my
right.
X-Men. I know you. I know what you're about to do."
Oh, it's a store phone. Oh.
Let me get it back on track. So comics are evolving, and if you look at those old comics from the 70s and 80s, I mean, yeah, things have changed since then. And one thing that went away for the most part are caption boxes,
yeah,
thought balloons, and it, you know, like you said, it, you know, the writers are learning more to get out of the way of the artists and let the artists. You know, tell the story visually. Also, I think as we quote unquote write for the trade, where you want like six issues to form a story arc, comics become much less dense in storytelling. And, you know, and that makes, you know, a 20 minute toilet read a 5 minute toilet read.
Yeah.
Which is just better, like health wise. You know what I mean? Like, don't sit on the toilet that long.
Need more fiber.
Yeah.
Well, no, but have you ever like been reading something on the toilet and it's like you're done with your business, and
you're reading.
And you're just kind of sitting in the
every day
the aroma of yourself
every day,
and it's like, well, I still have 10 more pages to read, and I know if I walk out that door, my kid and my wife are gonna ask me to do shit, so I'm just gonna sit here and finish reading this comic.
So you hide in the bathroom. That's fine. That wasn't a criticism.
In my aroma, and it's really good to have a stinky poop. Because, like, if you go in there and your poop doesn't stink, like, your wife just thinks you're in there, like, just sitting there reading comics. And she's like, oh, God, it smells putrid in there. What are you doing?
What are you eating?
spoilers.
No, never mind.
You know, spoiled for the rest of the world.
I will say another thing, though, is I really feel like now, as opposed to in the 70s and 80s, like, there's something, we've always talked about this on the show, about how comics kind of matured with our, with us,
mm-hmm.
and we were the first generation or age group to do that. They trust the reader. Like, you don't need to always have Nick or Wolverine going, I'm the best, or is it what I do? Because everybody knows. Like, okay, it's one of, like, if you go back and try and read Infinity Gauntlet,
yeah.
I love this story. It's so hard to get through. I have to, if I'm reading a bunch of modern comics and I try to read something like that,
mm-hmm.
there's this weird, like, cognitive dissonance where I can't do it. So I have to ease into it and read some older stuff, you know, and then you can go, okay. Because everybody talks like that, and there's always yeah. all the, you know, Nick Fury versus S.H.I.E.L.D., I love it. But it's really hard to get in the mindset to read it, because Nick Fury's brain is narrating everything, and it's so like, oh my God, we know.
Yeah.
Jesus, Nick, we know. We know the cigars are going to kill you. We know that Dum Dum is always, you know, argued with you. We know that, it's like, no. Now you don't need to do that. Like, yeah, we've been reading... They're writing it for us. We've been yeah. reading for 30 years. We know. Good. Just get it out of the way.
Well, it's not just comics, though. It's TV, too. Like, yeah. like mm-hmm. Netflix and binge television watching, serialized storytelling. You know, it's interesting. I've been
Everything used to be like an episode.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I was rewatching Next Generation. And even though the characters, I have been, my wife and I have been rewatching it. And even though they change and grow, it's still, like, way more self-contained, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, where's Worf's son been for, like, the past 12 episodes? Don't worry about it.
And, like, some of the storylines, like the best of both worlds or whatever, it was a two-parter. Yeah. That would have been an entire season of a show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it would have been like,
you know, oh, you know, Picard's a Borg now? What?
And 13 episodes.
Yeah.
Sweet.
So, I mean, so, and you know, so there's that. I think things are, I guess, becoming a lot more, I hate to say it, but lightweight in terms of, like, you get a little bit of story spread out over a longer amount of time. And, but by the same time, it's like, you know, people know our attention spans are shorter. So we don't have time to read, like, what Kitty Pryde is thinking as she teleports through a wall, you
know?
The
word you're thinking of that I find appropriate for this is fleet. You want to be fleet.
Yeah.
You want to be fleet?
Fleet to...
I don't think that was the word he was looking for.
Foot. I'm pretty sure it was.
I don't know that word. I mean, I know that word in terms of, like, a fleet of spaceships.
No, the idea of fleet is quick. To keep... To,
yeah,
yeah,
fast on your
brevity.
Feet. Airy.
Economic.
That's a good, yeah, economic.
You know, there's an economy.
Actually, I have a question
of
for you. Is this the first
verbiage.
Time you've written for something that's been digital first?
Yeah, actually, Amelia Cole was, yeah. And I didn't really read many digital comics. It was kind of my introduction into the world, too. And we didn't change, like, some people write for digital. For better or worse, we didn't. We just, you know, wrote comics. I mean, luckily, Comixology does this thing where you can zoom into the panels.
Mm-hmm.
And zoom in. But, yeah, it was our first digital experience. And, like I said, there were pluses and minuses. You know, like one end, I kind of thought what would happen is we'd have these digital issues, and people who read digital comics would read them, or people who wanted serialized storytelling would read them, and then trade waiters would get the trade. But I feel like we just kind of lost the single issue readers, the single issue print readers,
mm-hmm.
and so it's like there's like this whole section of the audience that we kind of lost. So, but we didn't know it at the time. We didn't know
right.
that would happen. So it was a learning experience.
Hmm.
The reason I bring it up is because one of the selling points they always told us when. Print was transitioning to online more for journalism was, well, in print you have a finite amount of space, but on the internet you have all the space in the world. But people soon realize that people don't want to keep scrolling.
Yeah, that's
up
right.
And
there,
up.
I was going to say
so
that's
the
problem.
So do you find that you're writing the same way you would for print that you do for digital, or are you expanding?
A lot of it's not conscious. Although I will say one thing that we did do is the first. Six issues are 22 pages each, and it was like $1.99 digitally, but the 99-cent price point was way better, so we knocked it down to like 12 to 14 pages each for the subsequent storylines. But I feel like we still crammed as much story as we would have, like, into that. So I guess varying page lengths is the thing that we did. Like, with The Bigger Bang, I had a certain set of pages, and that's it. And I had to, mm-hmm. you know, do it. Whereas Amelia Cole, like oh, this one's going to be 15 pages, and me and Adam are like, no big deal. And then Nick's like, oh, my arm, you know. I'm like, I'm up all night. I'm like, yeah, good job, buddy.
Nice.
So, he's a saint. Actually, the best thing about Nick Brokenshire, by the way, when he's a musician, and he's a rock and roller, and when he's, like, drawing all night, he starts to get a little loopy, and we'll post, like, videos sometimes on YouTube. Like, you can look up
Is Nick he, like, and, playing guitar or
he's
something?
Playing guitar, he's singing.
Oh, kind of, I'm totally looking this up. Oh, it's amazing. I like him quite
he's
a bit.
He's got a great voice, and he rocks
Does he write songs about the book, or is he...
One time I said...
DJ?
Yes, essentially. It's like, hey, DJ. No, well, actually, one time I said something that he thought I was sad, so he wrote, like late one night, he posted some song, like, something like, cheer up, DJ, and just, like, zing,
That's zing. Awesome. Why did he think you were sad?
Probably because I'm sad.
Okay.
Super sad.
So he was right.
I'm just sad. But, yeah, anyway, sorry, I don't know why I said that. Yeah, Nick, it's fun.
Nick Brokenshire, the artist on Amelia Cole, has a online comic called Day of the Dog. It's really cool, and he posts, I don't know how often, because I just found it, and it's either 16 or 22 pages up until now, and I don't know how often he posts, I'm going to learn that, because now I'm following it, but it's cool, I like it quite a bit, so it's some Day of the Dog, I think it's just dayofthedog.com.
Is it about a dog, or?
It's about so much.
It doesn't start out that way, but yeah, there's this great scene where it's like these two people, and the dog talks, but... They're like, what did you say? No, you said it. No, you... Oh, wait, it was the dog. It was cool.
Yeah, Nick's awesome.
Wait, I don't know what they're looking at, but I have to say, we
get some email or something? Or?
No, but I just found something out that's kind of incredible.
Okay.
Okay, so Twin Peaks, we all know it's coming back, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Please tell me it's coming back, because there has been some question of late, and I'm like, seriously, like, don't you dare.
I promise. But... What else is starting to shoot this summer?
X-Files.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was just guessing.
Doesn't affect me nearly as much as...
But I just thought it was kind of...
Well, you know what happened is they were, oh, look at all this hullabaloo about Twin Peaks. Maybe it's, you know... And they realized the movie format probably doesn't work because they bomb. So let's try to do, like, you know...
But I know how you feel about Jillian.
Well, yeah, how does it feel about her?
She's hot.
You feel good about her?
You know, she does get hotter. I thought she was a bit of a beater.
I'm not going to
lie. I don't want a definition for that.
But, like, now I see, oh my gosh, she just gets hotter and hotter.
I think they've both actually gotten better looking.
She should be called Agent Smulders.
I've never had, you know, like, X-Files, I missed the first two seasons, and everybody talked about it, so I remember watching. I was like, okay, let me see. And I was like, oh, it's the guy that played the transvestite on Twin Peaks for, like, three episodes.
Duchovny?
Yeah, he's on Twin Peaks as transvestite, but... So, the first episode I watched was about cheerleaders with magic powers, and I was like, I'm not seeing what other people are seeing. I figured what the second one was, and I was like, I'm so not seeing what... Okay, done. But then, like, a couple years later, late 90s, I saw some of the, what do they call them, the mythology episodes,
right, yeah.
And I was like, why aren't they doing this all the time?
Well, that's part of, like, the evolution of TV. That's, like, what they do now. Like, now, like, that, the 10-episode series
is going to
be, like, probably one story, all mythology.
And I
Which
mean,
benefits that type of show.
Those mythology, like the black oil, and there was, it looks like Rammstein.
Is that where they do
around.
Like a compilation of all the little clues they've laid through the season or something?
Yeah, well, yeah, there'll be some episodes that just like focus on the ongoing story, and then other ones are like self-contained.
Yeah. What was the creature of the week versus long form? Which I'm always, you're very like one and done. I'm always long form. I want continuity. I want to see something.
My favorite show. That was long form.
That was awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, one and done. It depends on the girl, you know.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Some girls you want to spend four seasons with, you know.
What were we were going to talk about before we started shooting? We were going to
the inclusive era.
No. Well, we were going to talk about Batgirl and some controversy.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I don't know anything.
There's
about
a controversy.
So what's the controversy?
Big one.
Oh
yeah.
Yeah, it's a big one. Well, so there's Batgirl didn't relaunch. Actually, they kept the numbering. So like Batgirl number 35 by Cameron Stewart and Babs Tarr was a new direction for the book.
Cameron Stewart, you're awesome. Not that you're watching, but you're awesome if you see this subsequently. So this is not... I always get mixed up here. My friend Maddie let me read... J.H. Williams III did Batgirl or Batwoman?
Batwoman.
Okay. Yeah. I can never keep the two apart. Okay.
So yeah, lesbian Batwoman.
Now, is this... Okay, go ahead.
That's an so awesome Batgirl is Barbara Gordon.
Amazing.
It's really good.
And when they brought Batgirl back, you know, 4 years ago in New 52... She could walk again, whereas, you know, she was in pre-New 52 was shot by the Joker.
If you don't know the history, Alan Moore famously in, like, 1980...
87, yeah.
Did a one-shot graphic novel called The Killing Joke, where the Joker shoots Barbara Gordon, obviously Commissioner Gordon's daughter, in the spine, right? And cripples
her.
Yeah. And she had been in a wheelchair Commissioner Gordon ever since.
It's a dark book.
Yeah, it is a dark book.
I read it when I was too young to read it. I've
never read the whole thing, and I haven't.
It's like 40 pages long.
But it's rough. Yeah, but it's a long story. But
it's well drawn.
Do you own it? Do you have it?
No, I don't.
Okay.
No.
Supposedly he raped her, too.
Possibly.
No, he takes pictures.
That's right.
I read The Killing Joke like not that long ago, and I know he took pictures, but I didn't get any rape.
A lot of people infer it. I don't think it explicitly says.
Yeah. I thought he raped Commissioner Gordon.
He does.
Seriously.
I think he does.
Well, that would be funnier, I guess, at least, Joker. He'd be like, what's funnier?
It's a dark book, but yeah, so the cover...
He put the PD in GCPD.
But then the new Batgirl story... the new Batgirl comics are, like, super, like, fun and pro, like, you know, female empowerment and everything.
Yes, and it's fun and sprite, and it's, like, you know... Kind of like a safe place, like, you know, so many comics featuring female characters, Vampirella, Grim Fairy Tales, the entire line.
They're TNA books.
And then you have the Marvel stuff, which, you know, I love the Milo Manara Spider-Woman cover, but there's, you know, it's very...
The new drinking game is...
Every time
Milo Manara, you need to drink.
I love Milo Manara. And I understand, like...
He's drinking. He did.
There he goes. Yeah, it doesn't take much to get Joe drinking. Every time I start a war with M, he's like, "Oh shit!"
Beard. I mean, come on. Sorry.
So anyway, you know, now that I see this new era happening, it's like, oh, I get like, okay, why? Because I was like, you know, the Milo Manara thing. I didn't think that it was that big of a deal. I thought, yeah, well, you hire Milo Manara, you're going to get Milo Manara. You know, so.
Shit.
No. Yeah. Is that twice? He said.
Yeah, I'm out of beer. So anyway, this latest thing.
I don't have any germs.
Okay. Hold on. Sorry. This latest thing is that they're doing a month of Joker variants, okay? On all the DC books. And the back row cover referenced The Killing Joke, where he's got a gun, he's like this with her, and he's pointing down like that. And
she's very
scared. Looks terrified.
Yeah.
And it's not reflective of what's in the book at all. I mean, inside the book. And this one actually isn't exactly reflective of... Although it's not bad. But Bavstar art is a lot more fun. It's kind of like Scott Pilgrim in a sense where it's colorful, it's bright. Even though Scott Pilgrim is black and white, but...
No, they're colorful.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I would...
And then you have this dark, grim cover with a frightened girl on the front. And it was like there was these people online saying hashtag, you know, remove the cover, and then there were these other people hashtag keep the cover, you know, hashtags everywhere flying around. So the artist Raphael Albuquerque decided to, you know, that it didn't fit the context of the book and didn't want the cover to be used for the book. And then there was an uproar over that. And then I get people calling me, "Do you have that Batgirl cover that, you know, the feminazis wouldn't let be published and stuff like?" So anyway, which isn't, you know, I personally agree with not publishing the cover, especially on that book. Maybe somewhere else there's a home for it.
Well, I mean, if it's misleading, I can see the argument. Although, I mean,
covers are always clickbait.
Well, that's the thing, and I mean, I hate to say it, but like I feel like DC has done a lot of cover clickbait in the last year or two.
But clickbait is different than being totally out of tune with what the book is about.
It is. But, I mean, if you're doing a Joker variant for every book in DC, is the Joker in every book?
No. I would say that a lot of...
There you go.
I think it's not necessarily
about the message that you send.
Right. It's not that it's referring specifically to the story, but that it fits the tone of the book.
Okay.
And that cover does not fit the tone of the book. And part of it... One of my biggest things was how scared she looked when she was crying. And and if you look at this cover that Mike has... She's a badass superhero. Mm-hmm. Like, I think she'd be pissed off if the Joker was, like, on... You know what I mean? Like, she'd probably be ready to flip him. You don't want to see your heroine. And if Batman was in that position, I don't think there'd be tears streaming down his face.
Oh, probably so it was, like, creepy.
Yeah.
It
was creepy.
Okay.
And he's a great artist.
You know, I don't blame Raphael Albuquerque. Yeah. Because, again, rewind 19 months ago and look at this cover. And we'll zoom in on this. And there was no uproar on this.
But again, it was the tone of the book was very different.
We weren't in the inclusive era yet.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing.
That's what I'm trying to say. Look at this. Let's pass this. I mean, this is the same exact thing, you know?
Yeah.
But the inside of the book was dark, too. And this is Gail Simone, and Gail Simone's a great writer.
Yeah, she's awesome, yeah.
And, but, yeah, I mean, Batgirl right now, like what they're doing with, when they come back from Convergence in DC, they're calling it the Batgirling of the DCU. Have you heard about this?
No, it's funny. We'll get to you in a
Google
second,
that
Sarah,
shit.
Sorry. When we were editing the issue with Alicia Grosso, and she mentions the new costumes for both Batgirl and for Spider-Woman. Mm. And it's so funny. You know, when you think of the 90s comics art, you think of very, like, when you think of women in mm-hmm. comics, it's very, you know, male fantasy, like, very tight and yeah. buxom and, like, to a degree that's ridiculous, right? So, but you feel like that kind of disappeared, right? It's kind of like, remember when Hollywood was all Schwarzenegger and Stallone, and then mm-hmm. Tarantino came in and everything got very, like, intelligent, dialogue-heavy, kind of, you know, nuanced, same kind of thing. However, we're putting pictures of Spider-Woman just like a year ago, maybe not even, versus the new costume.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh my God, this is so ridiculous, like male fantasy. Like, the clothes are clearly painted on.
Right.
And, like, just enormous breasts. And, like, just, like, to the point where when you look at it, it's weird, right? So.
I still like that stuff too, but.
But it's just so weird to see it juxtaposed now with what's going on.
Right.
And it's just happened like this. And this is, like, speaking to your inclusive era theory, mm-hmm. like, that is alienating. And we don't see it because we've been reading comics for 30 years and we're guys.
And we like circles.
And we like what?
Like, if you think about, like, what, you know, I think primally a guy likes is, like, circles. Like, think about a butt or a boobs. They're circles, you know?
I want someone to auto-tune this episode. She's like, yeah, I think about a butt.
But it's true. It's a primal thing. Look that shit up. Science officers, it's true.
Is this why I spent so much time playing Pac-Man when I was like 5?
Because you like circles. Yeah.
Is that creepy now?
Pac-Man,
I feel like that's
uncovered.
Creepy.
Creepier than it used to be.
It's true. But it's just interesting to see it juxtaposed because it's literally seems like it happened overnight
mm-hmm.
where they just got it. And they're like, you know, I feel like we're all going to be better for it because it's like, guys. And so now this is going.
That was like 3 years ago.
So this is where I wanted. No, seriously, like I kind of intruded on an exchange you had on Twitter yesterday or the day before. Where
someone mentioned it.
Oh,
yeah.
You should so be a part of a conversation about women in comics. And you should because, like, Amelia is so. What's the word? Like, the word that comes to mind that's wrong, wholesome, that's just not the right
inclusive.
Word.
Inclusive.
Yeah, I guess.
Inclusive,
I mean,
yeah. That's what it is.
Yeah, I mean, she doesn't wear a costume.
She's a girl.
Yeah.
I mean, in fact, like, I love the fact that, so, I don't want to do spoilers, but at some point she has to wear a cloak because
yeah.
it's kind of like part of what she has to do. And she's like, yeah, this is like retirement.
Let me break this down for you, though, okay?
Okay.
Spider-Gwen, in terms of, I think, that you'll certainly get, and I think I might have talked about this before, but Spider-Gwen is Nirvana, okay? Amelia Cole is Jane's Addiction. You know, Nirvana didn't reinvent
don't
the wheel.
Do that, because I'm not a Jane's Addiction.
I know, but pre, like, you know, 91.
Right, right. Jane's they Addiction. Were Pixies. Let's go Pixies.
All right, let's go Pixies.
I like that.
I like this. Amelia Cole, Pixies. Cool.
All right, so yeah, I mean, it's not to say that there weren't things before Spider-Gwen.
Right.
But Spider-Gwen was that sort of moment where the world turned on its axis.
Well said, sir.
And hopefully, like, a light will be shown on things that came before, right? And hopefully you'll still know me and buy me beers.
Forever.
But no, I think that, yeah, I mean, there's been stuff like this all along.
Mm-hmm.
It was always considered risky and not commercially viable. Now it's like, you know, I had a meeting on Friday with this guy who's like, you know, nice guy, but he's got this property and the studio wants him to make the girl a more powerful character. He's like, well, you know, she's a spy, like she kicks ass, you know, like what do you mean she's not powerful?
Wait, is this like Black Widow?
No, this isn't. No, is it something that's way
it's like
away.
An indie book, right? Yeah.
Oh, it's a movie thing.
Yeah,
so anyway, so I was like, and he's like, she's based on my sister. My sister's a badass. I was like, okay, but yeah, you know, yeah, you like the fact that your sister. Because his sister was a like CIA or whatever. I said, you like the fact she's badass, she goes to Russia and does it. But like, ask your sister what problems she deals with, you know, relationships or whatever. And and I talk shit about my wife, but I love her. Like when I take Carol to go see a superhero movie, the things that she responds to are different from the things that I respond to in like the I'm sure the Avengers, Age of Ultron. But I appreciate those things are there because it gives her something to respond to.
Right, of course. You know? Of course. Well, and I mean, that's like, there is so much room in comics. Like, I feel like Amelia Cole, there's so much there for so many different kinds of people to latch onto and mm-hmm. to get something from. And I mean, that's the way it should be. So that's like the Spider-Woman thing was so weird to me because it's like, no, like, it just seems like a big black box over the character. It's just like you're missing an opportunity because all you're really doing is dialing that character into, like, one segment of the population.
Mm-hmm. But to be fair, it was just that one image, right? Or was the whole
book? No,
it was drawn by Greg Land, so okay. You can imagine.
Oh, sure. All right.
Spider-Woman, I'm talking about, like, that was, I mean, that's the way she looked.
Yeah.
Since New Avengers started, what, like?
Well, no, since the 70s.
Well, yeah, but I mean, yeah. It seemed like it really, like, because she really kind of came back to a prominence with Bendis using her. Right, like, yeah. He brought Luke Cage back. He brought Spider-Woman back. Jessica, what's her?
Jessica Jones?
No, but, like, Spider-Woman's. Is it Jessica Drew?
Yeah. Oh, Jessica Drew. Yeah.
And again, I mean, Bendis is a smart writer, and he doesn't write dumb broads, you know?
Right.
But then David Finch draws really good circles. So, you know? Seriously, like, that. Look at, like, you know, I was talking to a comic artist, and I was like, yeah, you know, this might change, but if you want to be successful in comics, if you want to be a known artist, and even Jim Lee is guilty of this, draw circles, you know, draw in the right place.
Yeah. I mean, I think comics...
It's as easy as that.
Comics is a medium, and it should be, like, you know, inclusive means a little bit of everything.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I... Yeah,
I think it's getting away from that, but I'm saying, if you think about, like, you know, and again, I love these guys, J. Scott Campbell, Jim Lee, David Finch, that sort of style of artwork, you know,
mm-hmm. Bombastic. To go back to
it. Yeah, I mean, everything was bombastic in those two. Not just like the guys are like insane.
Yeah, right. Yeah, agree. Yeah, agree.
And
agree.
Guns
agree.
For
yeah,
days.
I mean, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah.
I think we should probably end because I think we're like at an hour. So, for those of us at Drinking with Comics, good night, Godspeed, and read Amelia Cole.
Yes.
Read Never Ending.
Oh, please.
Read The Bigger Bang.
Wonderful.
And DJ says you should read Black Science.
Oh, yeah.
Black Science. Awesome book. Amazing. So, okay.